In this episode, we're doing a bit of speculation about what might be to come in the budget in November. We're worried about why it moved from October to November. We're worried about what taxes might be included in it. And you are potentially going to be worried about whether or not you need to start getting your suitcases packed. Welcome to the Tax Compass podcast, navigating UK tax for expats with LSR partners. Welcome to the Tax Compass podcast from LSR Partners with me, Simon Rouet, and my business partner, Laura Sam.
Hi.
So today is mid-September. I can't actually remember which date it is, but it's somewhere mid 18th, maybe 19th. I'm getting to the point of being totally obsessed about the budget, which is now coming on the 26th of November. Annoyingly, we planned to get this podcast sorted out thinking it was going to be the end of October again, but obviously they need to come up with more ruses and finagling ways of raising even more tax. So that's obviously what's delayed it. But we thought people would be interested to hear about what we think might happen. Some of the stuff about, there's obviously a lot of speculation in the media. And this podcast will probably be a bit weird because I'll probably be doing more of the tax mumble on the basis that I follow it, as I say, sort of obsessively. And it's political speculation as opposed to technical tax issues where Laura usually steps in. So on that basis, I will start with income tax.
Yeah.
So at the moment, income tax rates are...
If you're looking at the main rates, you're looking at 20%, 40%, 45%.
And they said in their election manifesto, didn't they, that they weren't going to change the rates of income tax. So what's very interesting there is that, as we all know, politicians are very good at going by the letter instead of the spirit of what's been said.
Yes.
So they could definitely change the bands, couldn't they?
They could, in principle, look at changing the bands. I think the suggestion is that they might stay put, potentially, which is always known, but it's always called in the media as a stealth tax because it sounds like they're doing nice things.
So they freeze the rates and then inflation drags more people into the rate. So fiscal drag, as they always say. I actually think, so if you think about the media at the moment is saying between 20 billion and 50 billion is going to be her new black hole, having allegedly filled the previous black hole last time out. Those sorts of sums of money, it's very hard to raise those without going somewhere near the sort of the big taxes, which would always be income tax, VAT, and potentially employee national insurance. But they said they wouldn't move those in terms of rates. I could see a scenario where, for example, you start losing your personal allowance at £80,000 as opposed to £100,000. They could potentially drop the basic rate band from 37,700 to 30,000. I mean, I think it would be wrong to discount that as a possibility. I mean, I would definitely put it at a 5 to 10% chance. I don't think it's more than that. But I mean, it's certainly something that could be done.
Yeah.
I think freezing the tax bands beyond 29,30, which is where I think they said they were going last time, seems to be a bit of a no-brainer.
Yeah.
And the thing that's so ridiculous, right, is that...
Although, did she say, and I obviously do not watch it as obsessively as you, but did she say that they would only remain frozen?
Last time out, yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's an easy one where you can go, given circumstance and, I don't know, blame Ukraine or Trump or someone, we need to, unfortunately, keep the freeze in. Yeah. And the thing that's really weird, right, is that people will look at that and go, well, there's this 20 to 50 billion black hole. How is freezing tax rates in 4 years' time going to change how much money the country's got? And of course, it's all to do with the way that the OBR does their forecasting. So because they then say, right, we forecast inflation for the next 5 years to be here, therefore salaries will increase to here, and therefore if the rates don't move, we'll get this much more tax in.
Yeah.
Then we'll discount that tax back to today, and all of a sudden they've filled part of the black hole without actually anyone paying any more tax because it's not relevant for another 4 years. And it sort of shows to me how bonkers the whole setup is, because it's all to do with how the OBR does its forecasting. And time and time again, the forecasts are shown to be completely ridiculous and completely inaccurate, but it doesn't seem to change anyone's mind on how they should do stuff. But That's just me. So that's income tax. I think one that area that certainly a lot of our clients will be concerned about is pensions.
Yes.
So pension tax, there are, I guess, two big elements to it. There was an article I saw in one of the papers last week saying that lump sum withdrawals had gone up 61%.
Wow.
In the last little while, because I think that's an area where people really do think there could be changes. So do you just want to go through what the current rules are in terms of withdrawing pensions?
Yeah. So at the moment, you can withdraw up to
25%.
You can withdraw up to 25% of your pension, up to a maximum of 280
or something.
Something like that. Without kind of paying any tax.
So it's the whole tax-free lump sum.
Yes.
But then when you start drawing your pension, let's say you take the rest of it and buy an annuity, it's just taxed as income, like a salary. And you'll actually pay tax through POA, right? So I guess what could really change around that is two things. One is there's big speculation that number of for the tax-free lump sum could come down significantly. And I suspect what they'll do is it will be the cap that comes down rather than the 25%. Yeah. Because then they can say, no, we're not changing the 25%. But quietly, we can change the cap down to 100 grand. And again, it will always come to this thing like, if you can draw down 250,000 quid, that means your pension is worth £1 million. And in Labour speak, that means you're filthy rich. And so it'll again be, they can say, but it doesn't impact working people. Because obviously rich people don't work.
Yeah.
That's one of the great things about being rich. You don't work. It's great. And so I think there's that. And then the other thing that I think is coming back in, and it's interesting because the guy who's, and coming back to my obsessive point, I was on the Resolution Foundation website reading one of their recent reports. So the Resolution Foundation is a left-leaning think tank. And it used to be run by a guy called Torsten Bell, who's a proper leftist nutter. Yeah. So he is now an MP. He won a seat at the election last year. And he has been drafted in as chief economic secretary to the Treasury, and he has been given responsibility for writing this budget. And this is why I'm so terrified, because like some of the stuff he's written about how he thinks people should be taxed, like eye-wateringly left-wing.
Yeah.
And I think there's a very, very big chance they'll change tax relief on pension contributions.
Yeah.
And I think they'll either get rid of... So there's been some talk that they'll just harmonize everything and you get a 30% tax credit effectively for pension contributions. And then if you're a 40% or a 45% taxpayer, you still only get relief at 30%, which will have a big impact on people, right? But again, they'll be able to say, yeah, but if you're a basic rate taxpayer, we're actually increasing your ability to get a discount, to get tax relief.
So we're helping the working man.
Yes, exactly. So it will play into that. And I would suggest there is a more than 50% chance they'll do that, because that would raise a reasonable amount of money. And they're going to have to dip into all these pockets to try and plug this black hole. And the advantage of it is it will mean real money into the exchequer right now. Because people will still keep making pension contributions, because the people who work and think about retirement think about, I do need a pension. So I think that's one where it's a really good way of increasing income tax without changing rates or bands. So it feels like a bit of a no-brainer to me.
Have you seen much doing the rounds in terms of, like, in the news, etc.?
On this point?
Yeah.
Yes. So there was a lot of speculation last time round that they would do it, and then they didn't.
Yeah.
And the speculation, certainly the stuff I read, this is one where it feels like commentators are sort of saying, that's a given they're going to fiddle with pensions. And it's just a question of how much they fiddle with pensions. And again, it comes to this whole thing, you know, they should change the triple lock potentially, but that is just so politically toxic. And off the back of the whole winter fuel allowance debacle last year and reining back on that, you just sort of feel that the state pension, it's sort of a bit like the NHS, isn't it? It's sort of put on this pedestal.
Yeah.
of like it's sacrosanct. And it absolutely should be the case that for people who only live on the state pension, I mean, it's not a lot of money, yeah, right? Even if you've done all the contributions and all the rest of it, it's still not a lot of money. So it feels politically toxic to go anywhere near that. But private pensions, as I think one of our shorts went viral, didn't it, when I started talking about it being a political football. But it is a political football, right? Because there is this argument that says, yeah, well, if you've got a private pension, you're pretty rich. And it's like, you sort of think, well, probably not. And it's like, yeah, you know, I was looking at annuity rates. I'm such an interesting person. I was looking at annuity rates. And, you know, if you've got a pension that's worth, call it 500,000 quid, which sounds like a lot of money, but actually if you work for 40 years and contribute regularly, yeah, and your employer contributes, and most professionals have employer contributions,
yeah,
it doesn't take that long to get to that type of number over that period of time. You're still only buying an annuity that will probably get you 25,000-30,000 a year in terms of income. So it's not that enormous.
Especially with the cost of living at the moment.
Well, that's it, right? And so you look at that, but politically they're able to say, yeah, anyone who's got that, that's, you know, dodge. So let's have a go at them. So I think pensions is one where it's a very high degree of likelihood. So another area I think they might well go after is VAT. Now, again, that was one of the ones where in their manifesto they said they won't change the rate of VAT, which is currently 20% on standard rated items. But when you get into the detail of it, there's lots of things you can fiddle with. And one of the areas will be the whole zero rated or standard rated stuff. And this has always been an area of debate because there was this big hoo-ha, wasn't there, years ago between whoever makes Jaffa Cakes, McVitie's, yeah, and HMRC.
So with McVitie's, when they made Jaffa Cakes, they'd argued that they were in fact cakes because cakes are zero rated, whereas the chocolate covered biscuits would be standard rated and would have 20% VAT applied. Given that they've already had sold a number of them to people, if it was going to be a cost, it was going to be a direct cost to McVitie's. Anyway, HMRC were arguing that they were biscuits. McVitie's were arguing that they were cakes. And I think they went through a bit of a kind of a demonstration to prove that they were in fact cakes rather than biscuits.
And this was based on how they went stale or something, wasn't it?
Yeah. So cakes, when they go stale, they get hard, and biscuits, when they go stale, they get soggy. So on the basis that...
Oh, I might need to go and do some experimentation on that. Is that true?
I need to go back to my chemistry background.
Yeah, no, exactly.
I'm pretty sure they do go... Pretty sure they do.
But biscuits, yeah, it's like crisps, isn't it? They go soggy as well when they're stale,
yeah,
don't they?
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe.
Yeah, standard digestive biscuit that'll go soggy, won't it? Soft.
Yeah, not soggy unless you leave them in a cup of tea, obviously. So, yes, they could change the zero rate and the 20% rate and fiddle around with what is classified as one thing and the other. The other thing that's potentially more interesting is this whole change. Mooted change potentially to the VAT threshold. So the VAT threshold currently is 90,000.
Yeah.
Yes.
So.
But they've been talking about this for some time, right?
Yeah. So MTD, Making Tax Digital, came into play for VAT in April 2019.
And what does that mean? Just for people who don't know what Making Tax Digital is actually about.
So Making Tax Digital means that if you are...
Sounds like the subject for a very boring podcast, but we'll come back to that.
If you're a VAT registered business and your turnover is above... So effectively, you're legally obliged to be a VAT registered business, then you have to file quarterly VAT returns, but effectively you have to keep your records electronically. You have to be able to file your VAT returns electronically. And I suppose it gives...
So I guess we have to do that, right? Well, we don't do it.
Yeah,
Do you do it? I don't do it. I don't get involved in our VAT returns.
No, we let somebody else do that.
But so that's the thing, is like it goes through, and I guess the argument now is there are businesses that get to 85,000 and then they won't grow because they don't want to have to start charging VAT, because it's not like the VAT charging goes on top above 90. It's go right from zero once you register.
Exactly. And you've got some businesses who will work with other businesses, and you know, assuming you're a VAT registered business working with another VAT registered business, you charge them the VAT, you know, they pay the VAT, you pay that over to HMRC, but on the other end they can claim that VAT back. So kind of if you're talking with, like, if you're working with other businesses, the needing to charge VAT element of it isn't going to make a massive difference. But if you're working with the end client, so an individual, then they can't claim the VAT back. So all of a sudden, you then have to make a bit of a decision whether you want to take the hit yourself on the VAT, because as you say...
And it's 20% as well. Like, you could literally kill 20% of your turnover.
Exactly. If you were going to take that VAT, that on, or alternatively, you could end up going, well, I can't take the hit on fully. I'm going to have to up
my prices.
My prices, which then could obviously put clients off, send them in other directions. The only thing that I would say in terms of the VAT side of things, back in 2019 when MTD came into play, there was very much a conversation about, we're just going to give it a couple of years to get it settled in, to make sure that the businesses who kind of are really serious businesses and need to be registered for MTD, we're going to make sure that it's all running smoothly, and then we're going to lower the VAT threshold. And they haven't. If anything, they've upped it since it first came into play.
And the argument is it's a bit like the stuff around, and this was when we were talking about the income tax stuff, is like, the argument goes that some people, and look, we've had this conversation in our business, is like, when you get to a certain level, and then you've got to make a big decision as to whether or not you want to push through that level, because it might take you into different tax brackets and all the rest of it. And the one between 100 and 125 for income is a really difficult one. I mean, it's for salary people, it's different. But if you're growing a business and you're like, oh, I might start going into that bracket, I don't want to be taxed at 60%. And then you start thinking about all the things you could potentially do to try and not be in that. Yeah. And I guess the same argument goes with VAT, which is to say, okay, well, if we take the VAT threshold to zero, then there is no step. And so, and because it will happen to everyone all at the same time, you can make a, I think, false argument that actually it won't impact anyone, because everyone will have to put their prices up. And so therefore prices go up. Then inflation will go up. Then interest rates will go up, and then we'll all die.
And then effectively, and this is where it's really difficult, because obviously, you know, they're not doing it to, or any of their changes are designed not for the working man. And I suppose at the budget, there will be a lot of commentary about, you know, and we are doing this for the people. But if they do things like that, like national insurance, etc., it has an impact.
Yeah.
Fundamentally, it's not a direct impact, but an indirect impact. Like, as you say, if everybody's taking that same hit at the same time, you're going to end up in a situation where, as you say, not everybody's going to be able to take that 20% VAT hit.
Undoubtedly put people out of business.
There'll be people going out of business, and there'll be other people who'll be putting prices up. So the working man who wants to pay
that product, whatever it might be.
Yeah, it's going to go up in price.
100%. Right, we're now going to talk about the really big elephant in the room, and that is around wealth taxes in general.
Yeah.
This chap, Torsten Bell, I hope I never meet him. He's massively into the idea of forms of wealth tax. There's also been more chatter about land tax.
Yeah.
The argument with land tax is that you can't change the value of land. The problem with it is, well, who determines what the value of land is? And that, I think, could cause some real issues. But let's start around property, which always, is an area of, you know, sort of significant debate the whole time. So I guess I'd break it into three different taxes. You've got stamp duty land tax, you've got capital gains tax, and you've got council tax. As a sort of three areas where they could potentially fiddle. So stamp duty, they've already changed. Stamp duty thresholds came down, didn't they, from April?
Yeah.
But quite significantly. I think they've got to cut them in half. The certainly the starting rate.
Yes, I think so.
It doesn't feel to me like that will necessarily be something they'll fiddle with.
True. I was going to say, could they potentially, just talking through different options, could they potentially, obviously, the things that they're not liking at the moment, as we can tell by the surcharges. So the surcharge on buying second homes and on buying if you're a non-resident. So at the moment...
I wonder, has anyone in the government come up against the second home surcharge? Let me think. Well, she's not in the government anymore, is she?
So at the moment, so the surcharge for buying a second home was 3%. They put that up to 5%. And for non-residents, the surcharge is further, like, let's say further, but a 2% surcharge as well.
They're easy ones to fiddle with, right?
I was going to say that would be easy things to fiddle with.
There's also that element with non-residents. And I'm amazed they're not getting... I'm amazed they haven't already got rid of the rebasing for non-resident capital gains tax. It's the same thing. It's like, why not hammer non-residents? They can't vote, most of them. So
true.
Yeah, so I suppose they could fiddle with the rates again. And much like pensions, if you go back through the last 10 years, stamp duty rates are always changing because like one bunch come in and say, oh, we've got to free up the housing market. And then the other bunch come in and say, yes, but if you can spend 500 grand on the house, you should be taxed to the hilt on it. Yeah. All this sort of thing. So I guess that there's no point ever in saying it's not going to change. Yeah. I think the interesting one this time around is the so-called mansion tax. Yeah. That's been knocking around for years. I remember when the Liberal Democrats went into coalition with the Tories in 2010, that was one of their big things that they sort of fought about. And I think it was one of the topics that delayed them agreeing the coalition, actually, because it was a proper plank. It was mansion tax for the Lib Dems. And the other thing the Lib Dems was student loans. And they obviously got absolutely hammered in 2015, having gone against their manifesto pledge of getting rid of student fees. I think what's being mooted, it seems at the moment, is that you could have a situation where they'll say, so two elements, and we'll talk about ongoing mansion tax in inverted commas in a moment when we talk about council tax.
Yeah.
I think the interesting one for the mansion capital gains tax is there's talk that above, I've heard anywhere from 1.2 million to 2 million, you just don't get principal private residence relief. And so you'd have a situation where if you've lived in a house for the whole time, you can have... Your PPR would just be capped at 1.5 million minus cost, effectively. And then anything above 1.5, you'd just be taxed on at 24%.
Which, in our area of the world, is probably not too bad. Like, you can get a really nice place for that sort of value. I was watching, is it Location?
Yeah, quick
location
plug for Staffordshire property there.
Yeah. I was watching Location yesterday, and like, oh, they were down in Marlow, I think it was, and like looking at properties for about 600,000.
Two-bedroom or whatever.
They were tiny. And you start thinking, well, actually, and you know, anybody in London, for example, you don't get very much for that sort of level of money nowadays.
Oh, yeah, a two-bedroom flat in London is 750 grand minimum, yeah. type thing, right? Yeah. So that will be...
Could sting a lot of people. And it would also stop the market, the housing market as
well. It would. I wonder whether in that type of situation, I mean, you could end up with gradings. So you could have, like, in the north, it could be a different number to in the south. But I think that would be politically impossible because that would properly go down like a cup of cold sick, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So I'm not sure they'll go down that route. I think the council tax thing is more interesting. So there's a lot more chatter. And again, it's like if you come out and say, right, anything above 1.5 million, you're going to get taxed on. You can't really hide that away. Yeah. And you always get the feeling that rather than coming out and saying, actually, you know, outside of the tax thing, it would just be so refreshing if a politician would get up and say, actually, the country's a bit buggered from a financial perspective. We need to raise lots more money. Yes, we said we weren't going to raise income tax thresholds or whatever, yeah, but we're going to, and explain it. Because at least then people can like look at it and go, well, that's a bit rubbish, but okay. But all of these sort of stealth stuff. So there's stuff on council taxes that they're saying they might get rid of council tax or reform it significantly. And this has two really good benefits for the central Westminster government. Because what you do is you say, we're going to allow people to rebase their council tax bands so that houses over 1.5 million, let's say, and this is much easier to do at different values in different parts of the country.
Yeah.
You suddenly have... a mansion surcharge. So if your house is valued at more than 1.5, your council tax is 3,000 quid a year plus an extra 5 grand.
Yeah.
Because you've got a house that's worth so much money. And then what you do is you can blame it on the councils for using it. Now, how do you force councils to change council tax? What you do is you cut the central government grant. So they can step back and say, yes, we freed up council taxes, but then like Staffordshire has just been taken over by reform. Reform, we're cutting your budget in Stafford by 50%, but you can change all your council taxes.
Yeah.
And then they're like, well, we're going to have to fill the budget hole. Suddenly you can blame another party in a certain area. So that to me feels like a a deeply political and cynical way of doing it, but that I could see that that's an easy way of doing it.
And I was going to say that is definitely something for me as the political layman. I've seen like rumours of that as well. So that's sounding like it's...
Yeah, it's likely just an easy
to,
one.
Likely to happen.
So CGT, I guess the final thing on CGT is it'd be easy for them to kill the annual exempt amount altogether. I mean, you think about it, it's come down from 12,000. It's an easy one where they can just say anyone who makes capital gains is fundamentally not a working person, as we know. Yeah. So actually, it's all going to be taxable. And I could see them doing something like, say, you can include capital in your personal allowance. So you could do something there about saying, if you don't earn any money and you've just got assets and you sell assets,
yeah,
you can use your personal allowance against assets if you're not getting income. But then as soon as you've used up your personal allowance, everything's taxable.
I mean, there could be that. I suppose the other thing as well was capital gains tax, never to be discounted, albeit I've not heard much chatter about it, is the uplift of capital gains tax rates. Last year, we were really concerned that they were going to be bringing them in line with income tax rates.
I can't see it. I mean, so the OBR, the Office for Budget Responsibility, other offices and budgets are available. They've predicted, I think, that over the course of this parliament, they think that capital gains tax takings will drop by £30 billion because they changed the rates. So I can't see them doing that. I think it's that whole, as I say, fiddling around the edges, and getting rid of the AEA would be much easier and would raise some money. I mean, it wouldn't raise a lot of money, but it feels like there's an element of like we're going to have to go and look in every pocket of every coat we've ever worn to see if we can find that old £5 note. I guess that the moving slightly away from capital gains tax, but it would potentially create more capital gains taxes, is if they fiddle with ISAs. I think on the ISA thing, that's not so much of a tax raising. The big thing there is that she'll cut the cash ISA limit from 20 to, I've heard, as low as 3. Potentially will open, the idea being that it'll force people into stocks and shares ISAs, which will put money into the stock market, which will somehow create growth. I don't understand how that works, but anyway, that's a separate point. So that's ISAs. I guess the other one that we sort of touched on with property is an overall wealth tax. So various countries have tried this. The whole idea being that you pay an annual levy based on the your asset value. Yeah. I think the issue always is, well, there are two things, aren't there? One is we're already scaring off millionaires at an alarming rate.
Not just millionaires. I mean,
every man and his monkey. Yeah.
Hundreds of thousandaires, the amount of conversations we're having and have been having for the past 12 months about people looking at leaving the UK.
It's just gone through the roof.
Skyrocketed.
And especially with like loads of countries in Europe, you don't have to go miles and miles away to get different and more favourable tax jurisdictions. You're right. I think so that gives us two things. One is, lots of tax experts have said wealth taxes won't work. The big issue with wealth taxes is it's administratively a nightmare to do it, because knowing what assets people have got. The great thing with income tax is that you can, a company is paying, the company has to be registered.
Yeah.
It's all incredible. It's very easy to make it very transparent what people are being paid. It goes to a bank system. How are HMRC ever going to know what assets people have got? And you can end up in a thing like, how much is that piano worth? There's a piano in the room. One man's meat is another man's poison. But if you've got to add it all together, you've got, like, people will be told, right, you have to get an assessment done of your wealth. How do you do it?
But I was going to say, you also potentially have people who have got, companies that are very sizable, that they don't actually have access to money to be able to pay any wealth tax associated with it.
Yeah, so then what you end up doing is having to have some sort of facility where the government lends you money to pay the tax bill, and then what it comes out of your estate or when you sell the business or all that. And this is the issue that so many countries that have tried a wealth tax have ended up saying, we're not really raising any money. It's just encouraging people not to tell us what's going on. And
well, it encourages that, or for people to up and leave, which obviously probably brings us on to exit tax in a minute, but that is something. I mean, even without introducing a wealth tax, I mean, probably back from when there was the kind of the suggestions about the capital gains tax rates being shifted. I think that's probably the bit that's kind of properly kickstarted people going, oh gosh, I'm going to get out of here. But it hasn't slowed down.
No. No, and so when you look at that and you say, I mean, this is the whole problem they've got. So the top 1% of earners pay 30% of income tax. More and more, when you think about the sectors where people are paid very significant amounts of money, you've got like tech.
Yeah.
You know, when you think about what some of the share prices in the tech sector have done, you know, people get paid in stock and that's taxed at income tax. You've obviously got financial services, professional services. The fundamental thing about those services is that you can still do everything under English law, which people always go on about, oh, you know, English common law is great for contracts, all the rest of it. Well, I mean, you can go and be based out of Lisbon and do contracts under English law. I mean, there's nothing stopping you doing that. So, and the thing that worries me so much is that there's been nothing said about an exit tax. And that always makes me think, well, maybe they're busy working on it.
Well, I suppose as well, because the budget was like normally in October, it's been pushed by a month. Why has it been pushed by a month? Yeah. It sounds like there's something.
Yeah, feels like they need more time to figure out how they're going to do whatever it is they're going to do. And if you're going to say that you're not going to tax working people, you're presumably going to tax rich people in their view. Rich people, generally speaking, are more mobile than non-rich people. So you can't tax rich people and then not do something to stop them leaving, or at least if they do leave, make it consequential from a tax perspective.
Yeah.
And so this comes to, I mean, and maybe I'm paranoid, but like I'm not going to be in the UK when this budget happens because I'm terrified that they will introduce an exit tax. Yeah. And I think there's a reasonable chance they will introduce it as at that day. So you just come out and say, if you are a UK tax resident on this day, if you now become UK tax non-resident, you will be taxed at 2% on your net wealth.
Yeah.
And you have to pay that as a levy for breaking tax residence, or you can stay tax resident. The problem with that is it's going to bugger around with a load of tax treaties. So you just sort of feel if you're going to become non-resident, yeah, sorry, you have to pay 2% levy on. And you know, I can see them coming out with some sort of scope outs. But I just think it's, where else is this money going to come from? They've demonstrated they couldn't even cut the welfare budget by £5 billion. And it wasn't even a cut. It was a reduction in the rate of growth. They reneged on the winter fuel allowance, which was a nakedly political move, didn't raise any money. The only one they haven't reneged on is VAT on private school fees because they're just vindictive. They're also saying there's a £50 billion deficit within Reeves's fiscal rules. Where is that money going to come from? If you can't cut spending, you can't cut, you know, welfare's de trop in terms of what you can attack, you need to raise a lot of money. Like, a 1.2% increase in employers' national insurance contributions last time out was predicted to raise, I think in their figures, they were saying it was going to raise £25 billion.
Yeah.
So, and it's raised much less than that because the number of jobs has dropped by over 200,000 since that budget happened, and unemployment has dropped as well, which means that people are leaving the workforce in terms of the numbers because they're going on to benefits and are not looking for work. So you're increasing the benefits bill. You can't raise the money through national insurance because it's just telling employers not to hire people.
Yeah.
What, and you're saying you're not going to raise the main rates of like income tax. What are you going to do in the context of where bond yields are going? You know, we're heading towards fiscal Armageddon. What are they going to do? And like rich people leaving the country, let's stop them leaving without paying some sort of charge. It just feels like an obvious one.
But if they do that, how would that impact statutory residence test? Because at the moment, like, you could in principle leave the UK, become non-resident 1 year, come back in, become UK tax resident the following year, and you know, it's all based upon, you know, where you're physically located. So if they are going to introduce that, what the devil are they going to do in terms of tax residence? I have something new to learn.
Yeah, well, I guess they can change it, right? I mean, it's like you think about the way it works at the moment. Yeah, I mean, one of the great things is that we operate a split year tax system. So you can literally become tax non-resident tomorrow if you get on a plane and leave. And
that's what you'll be doing, yeah?
I shall be in France. I've picked where I'm going to be already. And we'll be doing a podcast where I can say, I told you so. And by the way, my dinner in this part of France last night was really lovely. No, but in all seriousness, I think it would take change to that. You'd have to think about, what do you do if someone's non-resident at the point they introduce it, then they become resident again, all that. You're absolutely right. They'll have to think about that. Look, there's even stuff that they could do where they could say, actually, I'm not going to do an explicit wealth tax, but we are going to fiddle with the statutory residence test to stop people being like they've done with the whole long-term resident thing. I mean, that wasn't a thing until this April. So there's other stuff they can do. And again, it's on the very technical side of stuff where people, like the average person, is going to go, I don't really understand what they're going on about. So I think people who are saying, no, it's definitely not going to happen, I just think that's naive. Now, do I think it's more likely to happen than not happen? No, because I think this government's basic idea is to try and muddle along as much as possible. And provided the bond markets are still open, they will try and duck really controversial stuff.
Yeah.
For how long the bond markets will stay open, you know, our borrowing costs are higher than Greece, the whole of Europe, Italy. And part of the problem is that, like, the reason French borrowing costs are lower than ours is because they're implicitly backed by Germany. And obviously the EU and the euro area is just a much bigger economy. Sterling is taking a pummeling, or the UK economy is, because, okay, we're at only 100% of GDP in terms of our debt. But we have two unique problems. One is the fact that sterling is no longer really a reserve currency in the way that the dollar is. And the second problem is the fact that we have, of any large developed economy, we have the most proportion of our government debt linked to inflation. So because inflation has been high, it's going up again, it means the bond markets aren't necessarily going to be open for that longer. But then you sort of feel that if we're getting into the point where we simply can't borrow enough money to pay the interest bills, let alone anything else, then the cuts, you know, all bets are off. Then you can say, right, we've got to put up income tax. We're going to have to cut 100 billion from the budget across the piece, and you're in a proper crisis. But so I think I worry about it, because I think there is a risk that some of these big taxes will come in.
Yeah.
But equally, I do think this government has shown that it is quite happy, as I say, just to muddle along. And maybe that's what they'll do. But I'll still get a nice weekend in France out of it. Okay, so in this incredibly depressing podcast, really, when you think about it, I hope one day we have a government where there's like, oh, what taxes are they going to cut? I wonder. Maybe not in my lifetime. Yeah. Final one then, inheritance tax. There's obviously been the change to the what catches you in inheritance tax. Again, there's been talk that you can get rid of the property allowance. So I think at the moment, is it $500,000?
So, well, with your nil rate band, it comes to $500,000, but it's 175 for...
Yeah, it's 325 is your nil rate band, then 175 property. And then if you give, if one spouse or civil partner dies, they can transfer the whole lot. So the whole estate can get up to $1 million of exemption.
Yes, agreed.
So, you know, anything in government with $1 million attached to it, you sort of feel that, like, we could definitely change that. So I can see them getting rid of the property band altogether, because there is this war on property. What else could they change in inheritance tax? It feels like changing from 40% is going to be hard, right? Pushing that up even higher. They've already dragged pensions into inheritance tax.
The one thing they could look at changing is the gifting rules. So at the
moment, that's right, yes.
At the moment, it's 7 years. So say, for example, today I gifted you some money, then that would remain in my estate for 7 years. And if I died within that 7 years, it would be considered as part of my estate.
With a potential taper.
Yes.
But they could get rid of the taper, and you could see them easily marrying it up with a 10-year long-term residence point. So you'd say you have to survive it 10 years, and actually there is no taper. It's in your estate until you've survived 10 years from a gift. Well, or get rid of it altogether, I mean,
the taper, just as a side note, isn't... Like, the taper relief is more if there's an inheritance tax due on it. So, and it gets put into your nil rate band to start off with at first. So unless you're kind of gifting significant amounts, like, you know, 500,000 plus potentially, or 325 plus, you know, chances are you don't necessarily get that taper relief, even if even if you did do the gift in that kind of, you know, 5-6 years before you died.
Yeah. So I think inheritance tax, another real political one, but one where Labour won't be scared to hammer people with inheritance tax because they have a political view that it's unfair to hand down assets to kids who've done nothing to earn it, in their view, or whatever. So yeah, that feels like an obvious one again.
It is interesting because I know our rates of tax are pretty harsh, but actually our gifting's quite generous compared to some other countries. I think Ireland's got a limit like to who you're gifting to, but it's possibly a lifetime limit in terms of what you can gift, and anything above that would be subject to tax. I can't remember which country I was talking about the other day. France, I think. And it's so much, but it's every 15 years or so you can gift that amount, and it wasn't an excessive amount, like €100,000 or something. And then, you know, you've got to wait another 15 years before you can gift it and not kind of create inheritance tax implications for yourself.
Yeah, and they'll love the idea of being able to do comparatives with other countries where the regime is worse, especially if they're in Europe, because obviously they love Europe. So it feels like there's a smorgasbord of areas where they can again look to raise tax, and it feels, yeah, the headline in the paper this morning was tax raises inevitable in the budget, which I think everyone agrees with. So, yeah. And on that note, it's quite sad, isn't it, really? Oh, well. I hope you've enjoyed listening to this rather dire podcast. At some level, there's gallows humour involved, right? So, you know, it's good that we're in the UK because everyone is able to chuckle at gallows humour. If you've enjoyed, please like and subscribe so other people can find the Tax Compass podcast. Thanks for listening to the Tax Compass podcast, brought to you by LSR Partners, where we help you pay the right tax in the right place at the right time. Book a call with us. Details are in the show notes.